like that clanking sound. It's really
clank,
awesome.
Nice clank, job. Clank. Nice job. Clankety clank.
See what I got? That's probably not even better.
Oh my.
You know, you just pause before you do it. Bang. Glass ding. Table. We are really well set up.
Ba-ding, ding, 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 ding. Ding, 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 ding. No coasters. That's our philosophy.
No coasters. Glass table.
Can you tell we have no coasters?
Glass table. A fucking kitchen chair.
Kitchen chair and the squeakiest office chair.
Yep. Absolutely no soundproofing. In fact, we have mirrors. Hey, how good are mirrors?
Mirrors, lots of wide open flat walls and a whiteboard on the other side of the room.
These are all really good.
If we're really quiet, we can hear what we were saying 5 minutes ago. Should really get a phone.
Nah.
Says 911.
Still in that phone booth around.
Yep. Yep.
And you know what? Somebody else has got a phone. Guaranteed. Wow. That's it. You know, that's guaranteed. But the problem with a phone is that it is really the most traceable way to find you.
Yep.
And I don't like that.
Nope.
One bit. I think that we've all really kind of traded in our freedom for a little bit of convenience.
Kinda a freedom fries.
I just think that maybe people shouldn't be able to know where you are at all times. That's not cool in my book. Really not cool. Because I don't think anybody can use that information with any degree of subtlety or whatever. It's kind of like, let's talk about this topic here. Let's talk about the iPhone fighting the FBI for their ridiculous demands.
Yep.
Okay? First they say, well, you know what? You can't have good encryption because we can't read the bad guy's email. Huh? You know what? When your world is so easily divisible in this whole good guy, bad guy, and I'm just going to use this information for all good, like, you that really fucking naive?
Well, like, honestly, what's wrong with the same degree of privacy we all had a century ago?
Yeah, where people couldn't just read everything that you
right, owned. It just wasn't available.
Yeah, you need a warrant.
So you get addicted.
Probably couldn't get one.
You get addicted to having access to things because the world is going through technological change and all of a sudden, oops, math happens, encryption exists, too late.
Or everybody realizes, oh man, I should be really backing this up. I should have better passwords. I should care about my encryption online because you know what?
Right.
People can take that and do some pretty nasty things with it. And you're like, and they keep getting better. That's a weird fucked up thing. Like, you know the NSA has this policy that they do not hire any hackers if they smoke pot. It's a really bad policy.
Yeah, I heard they were revisiting that. I don't know if they have. Yeah, well, because
they have to. That's basically the worst policy known to man.
Right.
Okay, I don't know a hacker who does not smoke pot. Okay, that's the sad truth.
Basically what fuels them.
Yeah.
Basically.
It is fuel. Like, they might be doing other drugs. Like, the pot just starts the show here, but that's the baseline here. If you're saying we don't want any drug users as people working on our side, then I'm like, then you have the not-so-good ones. That's it. You're not-so-good ones.
You're really limiting your pool, and not in a good way.
And the funny thing, too, is that I think that there's a bit of, what is that curve called again? Where it's not the bell curve, but there's this particular... There's this one guy who believed that there was, even among the greats, that there existed a curve itself of, like, there's always one guy who's in the excellent part who's way more excellent than all the other ones.
Oh, yeah, he's, like, 10 times better.
Exactly, like a Jack Nicklaus or something like that, where you're just winning all the fucking time.
Just super-duper outlier performance.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, maybe it's, like, a case like that where you just have, like, this, I don't know, super outlier.
Yeah, but let's, you know, we're talking about the FBI here. We're talking about the FBI.
No, but we're talking about hackers. So, like, a super outlier, when you're talking about, like, the skills of people on the internet,
sure.
There are a few people who understand it far better than everybody else who's kind of good, you know, still hitting, like, a few home runs, but not, like, 100 fucking home runs.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, these people are not always very careful or give a shit about the things that you give a shit about, let's just say. And maybe they're, I don't know if I can blame them. Like, you've been watching that series, Mr. Robot, right?
Right.
And that guy kind of represents, like, the elite hacker.
But he has some problems.
Well, he looks like he's tired a lot. Looks really tired.
Yep.
And, And what would you say is his biggest the biggest problem? Explain the show to people who have not seen it.
Well, it's someone who has issues separating reality from his mental fantasy world. And basically, he could be hallucinating. He might not be. He doesn't know. And he somehow gets roped in to this massive world-changing kind of anarchist hacking plot. And he gets in too deep.
Which normally happens, of course, yeah, with all this kind
way
of stuff.
Too deep. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but
I don't think you should.
He really has trouble telling the difference between reality, the cyber world, and his own machinations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But in any case, let's go back to the topic at hand, which is what the FBI basically wants from Apple, which is kind of ridiculous if you think about it. What they want Mac to do is they say, we want you to be able to provide to us a backdoor key that would allow us, at whenever we want, to access people's information from their phones.
No, it's not quite. It's a bit more subtle than that. It's they want Apple to create a new operating system to be able to bypass the front-facing security feature, the passcode lock. The problem is, such a valuable tool, like it's kind of like they're hacking their own system. Even Apple can't guarantee that they can keep that safe. And the incentive for one of their tens of thousands of employees or any external hacker to go in and take this new version of the operating system, which will definitely be, if it's ever made, other agencies will line up and request that they use it on their particular phones, used in their cases that they're trying to solve. That piece of code will be impossible to protect. It'll be like the Holy Grail for hackers.
Oh, well,
because with that, you'll be able to get into any Apple device.
Yeah. Well, you're effectively kind of creating, like you said before, you're incentivizing the guys that I was talking about before.
Yeah.
These gods that are probably hiding because, you know what? You don't want a job with the government because now they know everything about you, but you also don't want to go around advertising what you do because then you could be an enemy. These people probably just trick the internet into giving them enough money to just get by and lay low.
Well,
but with something like that enticing, I can't imagine that they'd just come out of their fucking holes and go for it.
Yeah, the arguments are all weird in this case. Like, first of all, the FBI choosing this as their test case to bring to court. On the surface, like, if you have a 5-minute briefing on what the phone is related to, it's the San Bernardino terrorist attack. On the surface, it sounds like the perfect test case. How could Apple ever refuse to hand over the key
terrorism.
To solve this? Yeah, terrorism. Big banner of terrorism. But if you just scratch the surface for another couple minutes, you realize that the FBI screwed up by changing the passcode. They could have had all the information they wanted from the iCloud backup, which Apple already handed over all the previous backups. But because the FBI, once a phone was in their possession, changed the iCloud password, it couldn't back up automatically anymore, and they lost their chance to see if there was any new
data. So they couldn't even remember their own password that they changed?
Well, the fact that they changed it meant that the phone couldn't automatically back up. If it had automatically backed up to iCloud, then Apple could have handed over and would have handed over more unencrypted data.
They didn't fucked up.
They fucked up. So procedurally, they fucked up. The argument that you can have like some security, that there are shades of encryption, just mathematically isn't sound. You're either encrypted and secure 100% with no possible backdoors at all, or you're not secure at all. There's no middle ground, which is what the FBI is arguing. Oh, you can. There's even someone who represented the FBI. I forget who said. Apple knows, or maybe it was a senator. Apple could easily tear up the secret code and toss it in the fireplace after they're done, which is total bunk. It's such a primitive understanding of how computer code works.
Toss it in the fireplace.
There's in New York. There's already over 100 phones that the that the authorities want are watching this case, and if Apple succumbs to the FBI's demands, they're going to demand, okay, Apple, unlock these 150 phones or whatever.
Everybody's just salivating.
And that's just one city.
Here we go.
The fact is, mathematically, and in the world of like cyber security, there isn't an in-between.
Well, security. All they would do is black or white. All they would do is basically take all the big companies that have to follow American law in order to be able to do business in America. It would fuck them over. But everybody else from the world that doesn't have to obey would be like able to offer unlimited encryption that would work and not be restricted to this weird American precedent.
Well, here's the other two things. So if the FBI gets their way and gets this secret, this super special OS that bypasses the number of times you can try your unlock code on a phone and try them programmatically instead of by hand, then Apple, you know, operating in China, for instance, would probably be put under a lot of pressure to do the same thing in China and the same thing in all countries, because they have their own, you know, companies incorporated in these other lands. And if they want to keep operating, well, they have to follow the same rules. And the third thing is, more to your point, the Apple encryption is just one layer. What the FBI is saying is, well, Apple built the device so you can unencrypt it. There are plenty of third-party software.
They could be logging in and all of a sudden hit on a fucking unbreakable encrypted email from a fucking company in some other
nation already,
that you have no jurisdiction
there
whatsoever.
Already
so
tons
it'd be
and
fucking useless.
Tons of apps exist already for encrypting data. So it's more just laziness that they might, you know, the San Bernardino guy might have had unencrypted stuff on his phone. He might not have. I've heard that the FBI doesn't even think that there is any extra.
I wouldn't guess
data.
That there would be, because
they're using it as a test case to get through the court system.
I don't imagine
they
for that data.
They screwed up royally.
I don't imagine it's for that data, but because it's a terrorist that falls within that category, which is so rare. Really, they're so rare that you're just like, here's one, and he has an encrypted iPhone.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Perfect.
It was like an opportunity. They were just drooling over it, and they didn't use their brains.
No brain power. Well, this isn't the surprise.
And other U.S. agencies have spoken out against what the FBI is doing. Other U.S. law enforcement agencies and of course, world ones have said, don't do this. This is a terrible idea. You don't realize that if you have a backdoor, no one's safe.
Including you.
Including you, yeah. It's,
yeah,
it's
me.
On the whole, we're worse off if we have this. That's the kind of counter argument here.
It's always a problem when people who don't understand the technology decide that they want to control it.
Yeah.
And you're like, controlling it would destroy the very fabric of this technology, dummy. Like that's what it is. I mean, even Senator Lindsey Graham, because at first he was all like, now listen, we need those back doors. There's terrorism. And then luckily he spent like about an hour or two talking to experts. And he came back and said, I talk to people who are involved in the intelligence community. They tell me this is a really bad idea.
Yeah.
Oh, you changed your mind. Well, congratulations. You were informed. Don't have an opinion before you're informed. How about that? How about you fucking switch the narrative right there? You fucked up. You should have even apologized. I should not have had an opinion on something I knew little about. Do you know how many people will have to apologize in this world if all of a sudden that was the new rule? Hey, you should apologize when you're being a fucking dumbass.
Yeah. No, and I think those are the strongest counter arguments, but once those are out of the way, you could just argue that, hey, maybe the warrant system of having law enforcement get into your house and get into your safe, get into all your records, even if they're investigating a crime, isn't the right way to run
and
society.
And plus, the crime has already been committed. I mean,
well, to investigate crime. But
yeah. Well, you're not getting a lot of new information. This is the problem.
Yeah,
here.
And, you know, the phone is it an extension of your brain? Some would say yes. If it is, then maybe it's off limits.
I really actually worry about how little. I mean, I see how much people use their phones. Number one, even in the way in which you use your phone, There's a kind of predictability about you. We can make determinations about your personality and all kinds of things. That's just a tiny portion of the personal elements in your fucking phone, despite all the other shit, your bank account or whatever. I mean, God damn it. Some people, their entire lives are on there. Photos of even their food. Like, it's fucked up. You don't even have a diary that has this much information about you. No, in the history of mankind, nothing has been so personal than the fucking phone. So it's like, should we maybe have special rules about that shit, maybe?
Yeah, but it's a moot point because, look, encryption exists. All this is going to do is raise awareness for the average person who's not using some kind of GPG encryption on their email or other tools.
Yeah, weakening one just, encryption doesn't weaken all of them. It just makes one type of encryption shitty.
And like you wait. WhatsApp is already quite secure. There's a bunch of other third party ones. I'm sure Facebook is going to be more secure. I'm sure the next version of the iPhone is going to be way more secure. This is just a big blunder on the FBI's.
It's just a demonstration of how little they understand the concept of encryption.
Maybe, you know what? I bet there's people within the FBI who don't agree with what's going on because they're just a little bit more savvy about this stuff. But, you know, the factions who are used to the old investigative tools of last century are probably pushing pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah, the old school. They still think, oh, you got to pound the pavement, But what's weird, though, is actually there is a reverse side to this, which is that now law enforcements are overly reliant on electronic information to try to conduct investigation, which means they're not actually pounding the pavement anymore. They're not gathering school leads. They're actually, you know,
They're hooked into these easy-to-use, easy-to-tap-into tools. It's like investigating auto-investigation, basically. It runs itself.
Yeah. I read this subject's Facebook page. I know everything I need to know about him. Okay, well, maybe not. Maybe that's not the best way to conduct an investigation. I mean, I even wonder, they were talking about this. I read an article that if you are completely off the grid, it's actually very difficult for law enforcement to investigate you. So we might be facing a future in which all of these off-the-grid people who commit crime are impossible for us to fucking track precisely because they're off the fucking grid and we're too reliant on the damn grid. So it'll be interesting to see how law enforcement deals with this this issue. My prediction is, like all things, people who decide laws are often very, very uneducated about what the laws might represent in the future, or what even what the minutiae of the laws themselves are. Specifically when it comes to electronic stuff, there is a huge discrepancy between the understanding of the lawyers in the justice system and the engineer side of it. It's bad.
Well, lawmakers, bad. You know, elected politicians aren't typically known for their skill at crafting a law.
No, but I'm not even talking about elected politicians. A judge,
they don't even write the laws.
A high court judge, a Supreme Court judge, do you think they have a fucking understanding about how digital rights will be important in the future?
No, I think they rely heavily on the lawyers to do the research and to present the evidence in a way that sort of makes sense in that classical legal way.
Yeah, but it's that Picard style of leadership. Right, we know what the weakness of that leadership is. If you don't understand the things that are
Yeah, you can't decipher bunk from reality.
You can't.
You
no.
can't. Whatever seems more eloquently presented
holds
more weight.
Yep. All you're really relying on is the strength of the presentation.
Right.
That's stupid.
And I
think that that's actually the kind of problems that we're having right now with any laws that are decided. Like, even the way that net neutrality is threatened. Like, of course, every big corporation that actually has a vested interest in the internet is like, please don't fuck with this shit. But, you know, who listens to technical advice when you're still in the fucking 19th century mode of lawmaking? Like, we can't get rid of laws. We can't. When's the last time you've seen
purging
news
law,
about
old
laws being completely purged? Instead, what people do is they use old laws because they can circumvent certain issues that are being debated now. They're like, oh, there's this 18th century law that blah, blah, blah. I'm like, are you fucking joking me?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The All Writs Act is what's being used in the States. Yeah, it's a good point. Maybe
it dates back from what year? 1870s?
It's the 1700s.
Oh, 1700s? Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So
that's before the union?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. How do we purge old laws, or how do we update ones that just need a little bit of a modern twist to make sense today?
Or even just the sense being that perhaps we have to purge laws because they need to be reevaluated from the get-go. We sure. rely too much on precedents and assume that the decisions that were made before
were
wise.
Well, you know what? Precedent law versus codified law.
Well, we live in a codified law world.
We have both in Quebec. Eh? Yeah. We have the Canadian and the or British style, I guess.
I guess they clash against
and
one another.
And the Quebec style, codified. Codified isn't
Napoleonic.
All it's cracked up to be either, because it assumes that you can predict every kind of...
Yeah,
well, to some degree, predict every kind of crime and lay out manual style or encyclopedia style, every kind of justice nook and cranny.
You can understand why the French, of all people, would like that. Like, the way they treat their language the same way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they just like to codify.
I mean,
and
it's an approach.
Yeah.
On its surface, it's hard to tell if one's better than the other, but, you know, neither of them have a good way of dealing with old laws.
No.
Purging old stuff.
And I think that we're also very afraid of change. I think that...
Let's
switch on to the second topic, which will be daylight savings. Hey, are you suffering from daylight savings fuck up? Here's what's really messed
we
up.
We are.
So about 2 weeks ago, everybody was feeling great. The start of spring was happening. Your sleeping habits were finally catching up. I bet you were waking up early, bitch. That's what was happening. And then guess what? Now we got to set our fucking clocks forward, because you know what? This old law that was decided because we wanted to save lamp oil, we're still using this now. And if you actually look at the math, the data, it turns out that we actually use more electricity from this really bad habit that we have. It's dumb and no one wants to change it. We're all too afraid to change. So what do? Nothing. That's our style. That's our stuff. That's what we do. Hey, I don't know what to do. Great. Let's do nothing.
Yeah, you know, right now, like, who benefits? Farmers? Apparently not.
They don't. They do not benefit.
Apparently not.
Nope.
There's a higher rate of heart attacks and, like, stress-related...
Car accidents, all kinds of bullshit. Is it to mix things up? I think it's just actually the cost of undoing this. There's a lot of companies that are basically like, look, we got to hire engineers to change the code on shit.
You know what's crazy?
We got to change our daylight saving policies. There's a cost associated. Nobody wants to pay for shit.
Maybe you remember, I think it was about 10 years ago, the U.S. decided to change the date, the dates where they imposed daylight savings time just by a couple weeks. And the rest of the world who happens to follow daylight savings time didn't. So right now I'm corresponding with people in Europe, and they're used to the old system where everybody changed on the same dates, but now we're off by a couple weeks. So normally we're like 6 hours apart. Now we're five for a little while. Then we're going to go back to six.
Actually, when it was first presented by Benjamin Franklin, it was a joke. It was a fucking joke.
Oh yeah, it was a joke.
It was a joke. We've all fallen for a man's joke.
You know, like...
We've fallen for a joke.
What's... in your mind, what's easier? Change everybody's clocks and screw up everybody's sleep cycles.
Yeah.
Or, you know, let's say you have an industry that's like picking apples or farming or something.
You change your fucking time schedule, bitch.
You just decide, okay, work starts at 5 instead of 6 for a few months.
You do that.
Yeah, you do that.
You
that's
do
on
that.
You.
You change your payroll. That's on you.
That's on you.
That's fucking on you, because you know what? It's fucked me up. I lost that. Everybody lost that hour, and I was doing great. I was waking up at 7:30, man.
Yeah.
I was like, I got the whole day. I got the whole day. And this is a natural waking. It's not like the alarm going off and you're like, oh, grumble. No, man.
And if you sort of think on balance, is it worth it considering the other half of the year we have a free hour? It's not that worth it. It's
a free hour in the worst time of year.
Sunday from like 3 to 4 or some crap like that. In the morning. Yay.
We're dumb. We're dumb. We're incapable of change. We're incapable of change, but I understand why. Because to some degree, if you look at the way in which, you know, even our own political sphere, perhaps not Canada so much, although we are sometimes a microcosm of America, but American politics is heavily divided with the left and the right. I predicted this many years ago when I talked about the effect of group polarization, which I've noticed and I've seen its effect, right? But really, like, when we're so polarized that I kind of like wonder if this will not ultimately lead to some form of actually physical conflict. Like, there's many reasons to believe that those kinds of issues can only be dealt with at a certain time through violence, and this has happened in the past.
Well, okay. If we're going to go that way, if we're going to say that's how the U.S. is going to play out, you know what I think is going to happen first?
Give me your best prediction.
All sports leagues will divide North and South first. And we're going to live like that and watch those, you know, the North baseball versus the South league compete for a while, then hockey, then football. And then maybe a war will break out. But I think we'll start with sports.
Right.
Yeah.
See, okay. Here's my little wild prediction of what would happen. Imagine a world in which Trump wins the presidency. And if you look at the voting trends...
Especially today, this and this is super duper Tuesday.
If you look at the fact that progressives, especially young people, are less likely to vote, and that old people have been very motivated to vote... I would be surprised if the old people vote, it wasn't as high as 90%. What do you think the young people vote's going to be at? Conservatively, I would probably put it at 40 to 50.
Yeah.
It could not be higher than 60. There's no way. And despite the fact that even young people still outnumber old people, they will not outnumber them in terms of the way that their own districts have been gerrymandered and all other kinds of ways that the Republican Party has already tried to tilt things their way. This is why they're even afraid of Donald Trump as their own candidate, because he doesn't support most of their policies, really.
Nope.
He's
sort of a broken arrow.
He's very much a broken arrow. So there is a very real chance. Now, it is not inconceivable that... given that situation, it may be a splinter moment, for America. Because if you look at America, it is really divided amongst a kind of North and South thing. It's never changed since the Mason-Dixon line. You can actually trace economic growth according to the Mason-Dixon line. Right. It's really quite sad. But because America has integrated the South's economy, which was always much smaller and weaker, more agrarian, right, and less sophisticated. They've always done worse, but the northern states and California, to some degree, has always propped up them. If, let's say they were to splinter between their actual real political lines, a poor southern portion, which is like the South's only interest is immigration because they are bordered with Mexico and they have a fucking huge obsession with that, despite the fact that most of their labor and a significant portion of their economy is dependent on that. The South, if it got their way, and if they got rid of all the immigrants and that kind of stuff and separated themselves from the North, would have literally no economy. Like, what would they have? Like, maybe the South has oil with the plummeting price of oil itself? Like, what the fuck do you have?
Resources, oil, yeah.
Most of the resources are things that actually are falling out of favor. Like, one of their big crops is cotton. Cotton is the most heavily subsidized industry in the world. You actually need money to fuck... like, you're paying a cotton farmer more than he's actually making. Like, it's ridiculous. It's highly polluting. So, there are many industries in the South that are basically propped up by the government. And they're also the largest drain in terms of the welfare and so on and so forth. So, you would have a lot of poor, angry people... with a lot of guns. Like, actually, most of the guns are owned by this group. So, and I also believe that many of the nukes are actually located in places that are primarily run by conservatives. So, while you will have all the money, they will have all the guns. Something to think about.
Terrible. Terrible.
What are you looking at right now?
Oh, I'm just seeing if there's any good maps of the
economic landscape of America. Yeah. Why are you looking at a map of the 1970s?
Well, you know, it's a good
Nixon
year.
Nixon versus McGovern.
Good year.
Yeah. Yeah, you know who was a big McGovern supporter?
Who?
Hunter S. Thompson.
Hunter S. Thompson.
He wrote a book called Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, right, all about McGovern's campaign.
Right.
But the thing was, McGovern was kind of like a Bernie Sanders of his day. And he picked as a running mate a guy who had unfortunately had stints in mental institutions and had been subjected to electroshock therapy. This did not sit well with people. And his second pick was a guy who was like a Dixiecrat. So all of the principles which he espoused seemed to kind of crumble and fall apart, which is why Nixon won so good. But McGovern was like, again, like I said, a bit of a Bernie Sanders.
Right, right.
Of his time.
Right.
Like he said all the right things. I mean, for Hunter Thompson to basically endorse this man. Hunter Thompson. Do you understand? Like
That's crazy.
Like the height of anarchy. Endorsing him. And for a large part, because of the Rolling Stone articles that he wrote, he made McGovern the fucking primary candidate. Hunter S. Thompson largely created a candidacy. And he did it by creating a false narrative where he was making fun of like the runner-up, which was, what was his name? Not Bill Key or whatever. He had a ridiculous name. It was, anyways, I forget what the guy's name was. But he basically just annihilated him. I don't know. I guess he had found something to hate about the poor man. But, yeah. That's the power of, like, gonzo journalism, my friend.
Crazy.
He was he played a hand in American politics in the 1970s. Although, Thompson also ran for sheriff of Aspen County and was thoroughly defeated. Well, no, actually, he didn't do too bad, but he was defeated by, like, basically a redneck.
Huh.
Yeah. Oh, it was Muskie. That was the name.
Muskie.
Yeah, his last name was Muskie. Can you believe it? I mean, like, you can't have President Muskie.
Nice try, Muskie.
Get the fuck out of here. Like, you have to have a presidential-sounding name.
Change your name, come back in 5 years, mm-hmm. 4 years, and we'll talk.
Like, If I was running for politics, I would change my name. Well, like American politics, I would change my name. I would change my name to something that sounded like, you know, oppressive, powerful, you know, stately.
Stately, like, I don't know, Napoleon S. Jackson. Esquire.
Ooh, I like it. The third.
The third.
The third. You know what my favorite fact about Napoleon is?
Micropenis?
Is that every stereotype about Napoleon is wrong. One, he was not short. He was actually slightly taller than the average person. Estimated to be about between 5'8 and 5'9. The reason why there's discrepancies is because of the different styles of measurement. But trust me, he was not short. Number two, he was not French. Okay? He was Corsican. So he basically was Italian.
That's a little distinction.
Yeah, he had an Italian accent. He spoke Italian, okay? And all of the people, when he was emperor, all the people that he basically put in all their positions, yeah, they were also basically Italians. The other thing, too, is that the reason why he had his hand in his, like, jacket all the time. It wasn't a regal shit. He was actually poisoned.
Yeah.
And he had stomach problems.
Crooked finger?
He had stomach problems. So, so everything you know about Napoleon is wrong, okay? Everything you know about him is wrong. That's what I'm going to say. But
he was born in France, though.
We actually have a tendency to kind of vilify people that we don't like. I mean, it's the same way that you will read articles about how Hitler had a micropenis.
all the great villains of history had a micropenis.
I read his biography. I don't believe so. Catherine the Great died fucking a horse. No, she didn't. Like, what the fuck, man? I know that they did bad things, but just because you did bad things doesn't mean that there was something, you know, messed up about your dick or something. Like, is that just a thing that we need to do to make ourselves feel better or something? I don't know. But yes, he wasn't short and he didn't have a French accent. Okay? Like, get that out of your fucking head. That is not Napoleon. Napoleon's basically almost an Italian dude. Because, you know, there are certain places
in Europe. Well, of course, like you're talking about Corsica.
Yeah, Corsica.
Is it real France? Is it not France? I mean, it was in France. But...
Yeah, but when you meet a Corsican, they eat Italian food. They speak Italian. And many of them don't even fucking talk French. There are areas. Here's what's weird. There's actually areas in Italy where no one speaks Italian. They only speak French. And there are some places in and around those areas where all of a sudden, they speak Italian, but despite the fact that they're supposed to be in French. So, you know, it's the borders that you imagine, they're not these real things. They've switched over and they've been all over the place. I mean, like, your concept of the world today is just a tiny fucking snapshot in the history. Like, do you know how many different fucking subdivisions Germany had when it used to be the Holy Roman Empire before it became kind of Germany?
It wasn't even Germany. No. It's just a bunch of...
tiny states that got... Okay, so in the 1600s, they were basically almost destroyed. A third of what is present-day Germany was completely fucking obliterated by the Swiss. And by the German peasant revolt, because they were having their own kind of problems with Protestantism versus Catholicism and shit like that. Anyways, I mean, Germany was a dump for a very fucking long time, okay? Just a dump. I blame the Holy Roman Empire. I really blame it. I blame Charlemagne. I blame... I blame ancient people from history for things.
I blame them.
Blame them. Yeah. Be like, what were you thinking? Oh, you wanted
to create... They may have shaped history, but I blame them.
You wanted to create a new Rome in Germany. Oh, that's quaint.
I blame you.
Do you know how many people have tried to create a new Rome? That's obnoxious, okay?
Yeah,
Stop trying. Every time you do, it's a fucking disaster. Third Reich, they wanted to be a new Rome. They patterned themselves after that shit. I mean, did you ever see the mock designs that Hitler had for, like, New Berlin? It basically looked like ancient Rome.
Yeah.
He had a big hard-on for Rome. In fact, there was something called the Nero Doctrine.
Empire.
This was a doctrine that Hitler gave out, I think it was in 1944, when he looked as though they might lose. And it said that if he died, they were to destroy everything in Germany. Every piece of art, every bridge, everything. It was a fucking scorched earth policy. It was kind of like, hey, if the Allies win, fucking kill yourselves and destroy everything. Luckily, many of his generals by then were like, no, I don't think so. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to give you a medal for the 11th hour kind of shutting that shit down. You ain't no hero, okay? But thank you for not blowing shit up. And related to this story, this will be our third and final part of the podcast, and this is fucking fascinated me.
Get on with it.
So it turns out that part of that Nero Doctrine, like the Nazis had been storing and hoarding artwork and basically hiding it in salt mines. In fact, they had hidden all of their gold in salt mines as well, trying to, you know, prevent the Allies from getting a hold of it. But at one point, part of the Nero Doctrine was saying, like, okay, you need to destroy all this artwork. And one of the pieces of artwork was the Mona Lisa. And it turns out that there was a British commando who was parachuted down to the town where the salt mine was. He had to summon a kind of volunteer army of 300 fucking people, arm them with weapons they confiscated from the fucking Germans, and defend the Mona Lisa. So the next time you actually see pictures of it, or even if you have the privilege of going to go see it, remember that it was within a hair's breadth of being destroyed by some Nazi fuck who thought it was better to destroy something than to let the world have its own art.
Well, we're seeing that in the ISIS region. Yeah,
they do the exact same thing.
Yeah, destroy history.
Yep, smash those idols.
Smash them idols.
Well, I mean, it makes sense when you were so insecure about your own belief. Like, let me tell you one thing.
If you can't deal with historical reminders that you are not the greatest civilization to ever exist, you're going to smash them.
There is one thing about every hardcore believer that they will never admit to. It is their doubt.
Right.
You know, like Mother Teresa wrote many letters to the Catholic diocese about the fact that she did not believe in Jesus. Yes, I hate to shock you. Mother Teresa thought it was all a load of bullshit. She was dealing with that pain of saying, like, Why won't God talk to me? Why is there so much suffering? I don't get it. This is someone that everybody assumes, oh, wow, she had a really love for God. No, the more you fucking believe in it, the less you're like, what the fuck, man? I'm not getting talked to. I did everything you asked me to. I didn't eat lobster. I fucking threw myself on the ground and tore my fucking shirt open and put my head in dirt.
Your doubt means you're getting close to God. That's what it means, right? Your doubt is a test.
But even in the test...
Don't fail the test.
I mean, if you read the Bible, even the test that Job has to pass, you know, the one who gets tortured by Satan and God lets it happen because he's got a bet with him. Well, at one point, God shows up when Job really does start talking shit about God. Because I guess he kind of lost the bet. Although technically the bet is that he would curse God. He never technically did curse God. But he started to get pretty fucking close. And you know, God had to come down to make sure this didn't happen. You know what his answer to Job was? Like, why'd you do this to me? His answer was,
don't question me.
Were you there when I created the earth, bitch? No. So his answer is, I'm all powerful. Shut your fucking mouth. And then Job was like, all right, fair enough. And then God just gave him new children because that's just as good. You know, when yours have been killed in a bet.
Yep.
You got new ones. They're better. You know what? Not one of them is going to fucking talk back to you. Guarantee you. Because in the Bible, if they talk back, you know what the rule is? Stone them to death. That's the rule. That's actually one of the commandments. You know that honor thy father and thy mother? That's actually comes with a prohibition that comes with it, which just says if you don't, you're going to die. Oh, and by the way, though, side note, in that very commandment, it says if you obey everything they said, you are guaranteed to succeed.
Ooh.
It's a promise from the Bible. It's the only commandment that promises positive results. It's listen to your father and mother. So I'm like, I'm a little suspicious.
If you never disobeyed your mother and father, you're good.
You're good.
Which is nobody.
You will always prosper.
Always.
There's a message for you out there. There's no parent in the history of mankind that has ever steered their child wrong.
Sounds like that was written in by a tired first-time dad.
Yeah, pretty much. Listen, you fucking assholes.
If you always
obey. I'm going to stone your little ass to death if you fucking talk back. Yeah. I mean, how many parents have actually done that? Like, followed through with it? I mean, I understand there's psychotic parents. But, I mean, it says it in the book. It's very clear. If they talk back to you, you got to stone to death. So, you know, there's got to be a few parents out there who are like, well, it said that in the book. Sorry, Billy. Sorry. You had to mouth out to me. Jeez.
No medicine for you.
Yeah. I'm going to bury you because the rule is when you stone, it's not, you just don't stone somebody normally. Okay.
Nope.
So the rule is
you bury them up to their jaw.
If they're
something.
A man, you bury them up to their waist. If you're a woman, you bury them up to their shoulders.
Ugh.
Because for some reason, you got to make it harder on girls.
That's awful.
Because you know what? Girls have all that upper body strength. I mean, a boob is basically pecs, right? We all recognize that girls are just secretly pretending to be weak to make us feel useful. Because obviously, Muslims know that they're super strong. Why else would you bury a woman up to her shoulders? Because you know what? If you escape from your hole... This is actually the real reason.
Then you're good.
Yeah.
You get a free pass.
You do get to survive. So if you struggle out and you get out of the hole while you were being pelted, it is assumed that God wanted you to survive. So that's why you got to bury girls up to the shoulders, because I don't think anyone has ever fucking escaped that shit.
Probably not.
Yeah, most likely not. But hey, it's part of tradition. So you don't want to question tradition, do you? Huh? You do want to be that guy?
Hey, your doubt means you're getting close. Don't fight it.
This is actually one of the things I have to admire about religion, because their answer to Mother Teresa's letters, because people found them when she was dead and they were like, what the fuck? Mother Teresa was a doubter? And they said, aha. But that just proves how much she was devoted to God, because she was willing to question it. And it's in that questioning moment that we always come back, is what.
Wow, you can explain anything away, can't you?
You sure can. Well, you know what? They've had 2,000 fucking years to work at it, okay? They might know a few tricks. But before we go, I want to just speculate on something, okay? Just, I want you out there to just think about this for one moment. The Vatican undoubtedly has an unbelievable amount of treasures that it has in its own vaults, right? I mean, it even has a giant vault in the Vatican where it keeps treasures, right? I mean, it has meticulously kept track of a lot of things. And I'll give credit to the Catholic Church. It has always been very, meticulous. They note everything down. They just don't make that shit available. Like, remember when Stephen Hawking was invited to the Vatican? What's right. The first thing that he asked?
I'm not sure.
He asked to see the transcript of the trial of Galileo. Because he knew that they would write down everything that was said.
Right.
But they did not want to show that shit. Now, how valuable do you think to history the literal trial of Galileo is? How valuable is that to the history books? And that's just scratching the surface of the kind of historical documents that the Catholic Church has in their possession. It is literally a treasure trove. It is immeasurable in wealth of just information. Forget the fucking gold, man. Forget that shit.
What have they got to hide?
All the stuff that they have suppressed forever. And no one is quite sure of the size of these archives. But it must be unimaginably huge, okay? How thick are the walls of the Vatican? Again, it was like something like 9 or 10 feet or something. Like, you know, when they build something, well,
enough,
they usually...
Enough so spirits can't escape, right?
That's when they build, when they build something, they build it really thick and big and impressive. And they have billions of dollars. And as I've mentioned in another podcast, can you imagine how rich you'd be if you were the number one money launderer in the world? Probably a lot.
Are they still the number one landowner too, or is
yes.
that...
I've asked other experts on this subject. I've asked if the rest of the world was forced to buy up the land that the Catholic Church owned, could we afford it? And the answer is no.
Wow.
Technically, we could not afford to pay the Catholic Church all that it quote-unquote owns. They're the richest organization. They may be richer than most countries. There's probably only China and America that are richer than the Catholic Church. And I would argue that if we were forced to actually buy the land from them, they would be richer. So you have this entity that doesn't actually really exist in any real sense that has more money than is kind of fathomable to you and I. And these are your enemies. They control the behavior and actions of 1.6 billion people. Like... That's more than even any country. Like, there's no country that has 1.6. I think the biggest one is 1.2. So, that's a lot. That's a lot of power. And, you know, there are some countries where you were automatically taxed and that money goes to the Catholic Church? That's fucked up.
Like where? Italy? Well, do they still have a thing?
I don't know if it's Italy. I know that in Germany you have to opt out.
Right.
Is it... Austria, where it's also the same idea, but I think that actually goes back to the Reichskonkordat.
I can't imagine they still do that in modern age.
I don't know. Like I said, we have a problem getting rid of laws. Whoa. And I would not be surprised if that there are many laws that were signed in from the Reichskonkordat that may still be in effect. Right? Like, we are afraid of that kind of shit. And when it comes to religions, too, we don't typically like to take power away from them.
Yeah, it's just like laws, you know. It takes real effort to purge old traditions.
But the truth is, the Catholic Church has never needed to publish a statement about what its worth is. So there are no answers. Like, one of the leading experts who wrote about this, I forget what his name is, but he wrote something called God's Bankers. We watched the documentary, actually, about it. He studied this for almost a decade, if not more. And... could not actually come up with a number for what the Catholic Church is worth. There is no number. They are not fucking forced to tell anybody what their really bank accounts are. There is no law that forces them to do it. In fact, as soon as there was some talk after the financial collapse and all of the weird shit that they were trying to pull, when there was a tiny amount of pressure for them to conform to laws that were being passed for European banks... What happened? Ratzinger steps down. There's all of this kind of hullabaloo about a new administration, and that buys them time for a new guy to come up, which is St. Francis I. And the first thing that he does in April 2015, when they were just about to announce reforms to the Vatican Bank, is that he announces they will not reform the Vatican Bank. It will not happen. We will now wash our hands clean of this whole fucking bullshit, because nobody is going to force us to conform. Because it is far too useful to have an organization that is not, it's not liable to any real banking laws, that can move money any way that it wants across the world. So that turns out to be really useful. And I don't know of any other organization that launders as much money as they do. Some of it is actually maybe necessary, by the way. I'm not suggesting that all money laundering is evil. Some of it may be necessary. You've dealt with that shit. You work for a big company. Do you think that big companies don't fucking bribe world governments to make shit happen?
No comment.
That's wise. But let me tell you something, that large corporations will have money squared aside just for that shit. Where are you going to keep it? Huh? You're not keeping it in your sock.
Banco Imbrosio? Imbroglio?
Oh, that was an old motherfucking scandal, bro. You're talking about something from the 80s when they were laundering money for the mafia. But that was all... That's... You know what? Laundering money for the mafia? That's bullshit. Laundering money for large corporations? That's where the money is, okay? The mafia is a joke, all right? When you're having to launder money to Zimbabwe to fucking, you know, put through some pipeline, that's when you need the Vatican, let me tell you what. It's great. They really are God's bankers. They make shit happen. So, you know, that's great. How can you bring them down? You can't. You cannot. They have figured out the best way to be useful.
They need their own currency. That'd be so badass. Oh, God.
Well, do you know how much trouble they were in when Italy went to the euro? Oh, it was bad. It was one of those things where the Catholic Church has always been this close to being exposed all the fucking time. And yet they find at the fucking 11th hour the solution. They're brilliant. Like, they must have like the smartest people fucking working for them all the time. You know, have faith. The Catholic Church will figure out some form of loophole. Like, if tomorrow we try to fucking, you know, audit the Vatican Bank, they'll be dissolved into something else.
Pretty slippery.
They are slippery. I mean, and the Vatican Bank is a tiny portion of their entire weirdo estate. Like, you know, even the Jesuits, like orders within the fucking Roman Catholic Church have giant banks. Like, the Jesuits have like the 17th largest bank in the world, where they just keep money. Because their money is 2,000 years old, man. Do you have that kind of investment?
That's old money.
Well, that's the kind of like money that you steal from, like, you know, the Knights Templar and that kind
old
of
old coinage.
But the best thing that you can do, the most important thing the Vatican does, you know what it is? It stores stuff that you don't want anybody to know about. And that's what I was telling you about before. What kind of fucking treasures are in the Vatican hold? You know, like the 9 feet thick or 11 feet thick walls that you can't drill through. What the fuck is in there, man? Huh? Maybe the real Mona Lisa, the one that was never in danger to begin with.
Right.
That poor British guy fucking risked his life for some fake idiot. All those treasures in a Vatican.
Diversion.
Diversion. What are you looking at right now?
Oh, some engraving of all the different popes back to St. Peter.
Oh, you know what I'd love? I'd love to write a book about the most debaucherous popes.
Oh, yeah. Bad popes. That'd be great.
It would be cool.
Miniseries.
Yeah. Like just the worst, you know? Like the ones that started the Inquisitions, yeah, or all that kind of shit. Because a pope, it's been pretty important in terms of policy making. He was like the president of the world for a long time. Like, you, even European kings had to fucking like go and suck the pope's dick just to make some decisions. Trust me. Why do you think the King of England was like, I'm breaking off, you guys? Fuck that shit.
Pope Stephen the VI.
What did he do?
Had his predecessor, Pope Formosus, exhumed, tried, defingered, briefly reburied, and thrown in the Tiber. Not bad.
Okay, so that just sounds like petty.
This is a book called The Bad Popes, written in 69 by E.R. Chamberlain. Pope John the VII, this was 955 to 964, gave land to a mistress, murdered several people, and was killed by a man who caught him in bed with his wife.
Okay.
All right. Popes can have wives.
They had wives up until the 11th century, actually.
Oh, yeah. Things, yeah, they changed that.
Well, they changed it because what was happening is that Well, one, you couldn't get married until the 11th century, but you weren't celibate. You had mistresses and shit. It was mostly just because they were afraid that as you had heirs, the wealth of the church would start to be divided up. So it was like, you can't inherit anything from a cardinal or from a bishop. It goes back to the church, effectively.
All right. Pope Benedict the Ninth, 1032 to 1044, apparently sold the papacy. I'm sure there's an interesting backstory there. Pope Boniface the Eighth, 1294.
It might have been when there were multiple popes.
It could have been. Could have been. Pope Boniface the Eighth was lampooned in Dante's Divine Comedy. Oh yeah. Pope Urban the Sixth complained that he did not hear enough screaming when cardinals who had conspired against him were tortured.
Okay.
That's pretty evil. Pope Alexander the Sixth.
Oh yeah, the Borgias. Yeah.
Yeah, the Borgias. Was guilty of nepotism and whose unattended corpse swelled until it could barely fit in a coffin.
Wait. God. Okay, so first of all, what they're missing about him is, if it is the Borgia that I'm talking about...
I mean, I guess
about,
he just decomposed.
Is that if it's the Pope that I'm thinking about, is that he had a competition in the Vatican, where he invited a bunch of prostitutes and everybody had a jizzing contest. This is not a joke. You can verify this, where basically whoever had the largest emission was given a prize at the end of the night. This happened, yeah, in the Vatican.
That's nasty.
It's a fucking gangbang. Goddamn Borgia gangbang. And his children, by the way, were in an incestuous relationship. Ugh. You can actually read all about it. There's a miniseries, actually, called The Borgias. And a very powerful Italian family that basically managed to bully their way into the papacy. But yeah, they were just... Pretty swinging. And like, what you said it was written what year? 1960, whatever?
69, yeah.
Too fucking pussy bitch to fucking write about the real shit. You know what? This book sucks. This book really sucks.
Well, this is an article about the book. We don't know if the book sucks.
Yeah, well, the synopsis sucks.
Yeah, the synopsis sucks. Pope Leo X, a spendthrift member of the Medici family who once spent 1/7 of his predecessor's reserves on a single ceremony. What a baller.
Okay, but there would almost be no Italian Renaissance if it wasn't for the Medici family. So is that really bad?
I don't understand how that's
spent. He just kept the fucking money flowing. Look, it's called fast money in all economies. I bet you him spending that probably fucking made a big difference in the economy of the time. Sure. So not bad.
And apparently Pope Clement the VII also made the list, 1523. Also a Medici, whose power politicking with France, Spain, and Germany got Rome sacked. Ooh. All right.
All right.
Interesting.
Not a great list.
Nope.
We can do better.
Terrible popes.
Oh, their popes are worse than that. Like Innocent the whichever that started the Inquisition. Why is he not in the fucking list?
Good question.
Or the guy who actually instituted the maledictive whatever, the fucking witch hunter's guide. Mm-hmm. Like, there have been some sick popes, yo. Like, this list blows.
You know what? There's a lot of popes.
There's a lot of fucking popes. I'm telling you, by 1969, just because a guy fucking wrote it doesn't mean he did his research. And he might have been even Catholic, too, so he didn't want to fucking, like, you know, out these guys too much. But when you're having a fucking orgy, all right, where you're measuring the biggest emission. I'm not saying that's bad, by the way. That's a lot of fun. Like, wow. Talk about open-minded.
But it's not very popely.
It's not great.
It's not great. It's not ideal.
It's definitely not what you're going for.
No.
You know?
Wrong motif.
It may affect the dignity of the office. If there is such a thing. I mean, you're wearing a really weird hat. I gotta wheeze.
All right, that's a wrap.